Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Now, South Africa, you might have read, is in the middle of a high-stakes 67 billion rand steel tariff review with the ITAC, that's the International Trade Administration Commission, reassessing duties that could shape the future of the country's industrial competitiveness. So on the one hand, local steel producers like ArcelorMittal South Africa are lobbying for continued protection. You know what sort of difficulty the company is in. On the other side, downstream industries like construction, mining, manufacturing, I guess, say duties are driving up costs. That's killing jobs and forcing them to import at a loss. At the center of this very complex balancing act is Ayabonga Qawe, who is ITAC commissioner. And I guess the big question is, can South Africa afford protectionist policies in a globalized, cost-sensitive economy? So, Commissioner, very warm welcome and thanks very much for joining us. How does one then justify duties when even our largest steel user, Transnet, is importing to reduce costs?
Good afternoon to you, Jeremy, and thank you so much for having us. I think the question you pose is probably one of the many questions in the complicated web of what we do as a small open market economy that has had historically some capability to make a wide range of steel products across the entire value chain in a global context where there's structural overcapacity of steel. It doesn't only introduce challenges and vulnerabilities to the sector itself, but even to some of the downstream customers and users of the product, including Transnet that you mentioned. And part of our cruel irony that we might have, Jeremy, to your point, is that you have a Transnet that would, for many reasons that might be known to Transnet, would import certain sections of steel or rail components at a time when some of the domestic capability we have to produce a rail products in what is now Mpumalanga, many of those facilities are operating at chronically low levels of capacity utilization. And so this is part of the challenge that we have, which is that you're not going to resolve the challenge of the steel sector only by dealing with tariffs, but tariffs have to be part of the discussion, precisely because you do have a situation, one, of a chronic and global structural overcapacity challenge. There's much more steel that we are capable as the world to produce than at this stage the world can absorb in many applications downstream, be it construction, automotive sector, and many other downstream applications of steel. So we've seen per capita consumption of steel growing much slower over the last two decades than the installed capacity and capital stock to produce steel that we've seen in places like China and India. And so you can't not consider tariffs. They have to be on the table precisely because as protectionism advances in other parts of the world, economies like South Africa might remain as the few kind of top 20 steel importing nations that will still be open to a kind of the deviation of some of those imports that would have been destined for the protected markets might potentially come here and displace our own capabilities at a time of deep crisis, as you say. And our view has been that the AMSA crisis is a constituent part of a broader national crisis in steel. This overcapacity I'm talking about, Jeremy, is also evident in South Africa across many profiles and grades of steel product as well.
I guess it all comes down to the scale of tariff, because there's the argument that tariffs can prop up inefficiencies at companies like ArcelorMittal South Africa, for instance, at the expense of job creation downstream. So you've got to find that sweet spot, which is perhaps more difficult than one thinks.
Well, there's a balance. Our kind of policy disposition has always been that We are not pursuing autarky here, which is kind of creating a tariff wall around our own market. But we manage customs duty amendments in a way that doesn't numb the competitive impulse of firms to innovate, to improve their productivity and be able to compete in the market. And our observation of the steel tariff regime in line with the Uruguay round in the 1990s is that steel is one of the areas where we've got bounded tariffs. You have a ceiling to the extent which you can increase your tariffs. And I think in this notice, we've also shared with the public, here are all of the Chapter 72, Chapter 73, Chapter 82 and 83 products. Here's where the current tariffs are. here's what those bound rates might be. And it's quite clear that across many categories of steel, you do have, in some cases, tariffs that are 10% where the bound rate is 15%. Implied in that, you have 5% of policy wiggle room to be able either to increase tariffs, but also part of the discussion, Jeremy, is not just about increasing tariffs. There's also a discussion about, do your rebate measures in Schedule 4 of the Customs and Excise Act, which allow for the duty-free importation of certain intermediate input products in the steel market, are those calibrated correctly? Are those being subject to abuse? Are those a basis for circumvention of other protective measures? And so this review is not just about a very hawkish attempt to raise tariffs across the board, but a much more balanced reading of where we might have to raise tariffs, but also in other instances where we might have to complement our existing rebate provision, which would effectively reduce the tariff burden or the duty liability of firms that need imported inputs in order to make other downstream steel products. It's kind of the dance of a regulator, that you're not only moving in one direction, but recognizing our own, the peculiarities of our own industrial profile, recognizing the interests of all stakeholders in the steel value chain, both at the primary level, which is your point on AMSA, but there are many other producers downstream who might have a different interest than just getting tariffs raised across the board. They might be interested in reducing their duty liability on their input material.
Is it time to ask the question as to whether the steel sector is truly strategic, as has been pushed forward before? Is this simply not trying to save a declining industry with old thinking?
Well, I think we have to debate what accounts for the decline. And I think there are many kind of assertions that are out there in the public, which I won't get into in any detail. But if you arrive at a certain perspective about what has accounted for the decline, you might also think through about how we might at a policy level respond. But the bigger existential question you're asking is, should this be an industry that we at a national level back, be it by foregone tax revenue or even putting some protective cover that raises costs across the economy? Our considered view, just by the breadth and extent of downstream use of steel, is that this is a strategic sector. You cannot have an automotive sector integrated into global value chains, much like the one South Africa has, without access to upstream intermediate inputs of steel, both primary grades of a flat and even a long product nature. Similarly, our own aerospace, defense, and manufacturing capability is heavily reliant on different specialty grades of steel that are produced in the country. And I could go even further if I take a look at the extent of use of structural and other steel products in construction that suggest that in a polarized and increasingly partitioned multilateral trading system, you would be visiting an inordinate amount of risk, vulnerability that you would have to respond to if you were to give up on having some capability to fabricate steel domestically. We've seen during COVID, we've seen during the supply chain challenges associated with the conflict in Eastern Europe, the moment you've got that type of geopolitical situation, it affects the multilateral trading system in very particular ways, raises lead times, but I think in our case, begins to place the entire industrial destiny of the country in the hands of people who might not necessarily have the same interests that South Africa Inc. might have.
And I'm going to leave it there with my thanks and appreciation. That's Ayabonga Kawe, who is Commissioner at the International Trade Administration Commission. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.